Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. I want you all to join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to our Facebook pages. You can tweet me here at Mark Steiner as we talk with Dr. Niaz Khosravi, who is Criminal Justice Director of the NAACP nationally. And Dr. Niaz Khosravi, welcome. Good to have you with us. Hello, Dr. Khosravi?
Yes, I'm here.
Doctor, so we didn't hear you. Welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So how long have you had this position now?
I've been with the NAACP for a little over 5 years now, and I became the director about 2.5 years ago.
So I'm curious about the major pushes here. I mean, we've seen so much written recently in the last several years about the mass incarceration rates in this country, and the difficulty America seems to have to putting their arms around this. I was reading a piece the other day about the some people calling for a national commission on mass incarceration, that the president could easily just invoke as President Johnson invoked the commission, the Kerner Commission, to look at what was going on with poverty and race in America after all the rebellions of 60 in the 60s in the inner cities. So talk a bit about that.
So I think what's happening is that the entire country is recognizing that what we have done over the last several decades with you know, this get tough on crime mentality really hasn't worked. Our country isn't safer. All we have done is really create a system for warehousing people, most of whom don't need to be in prison to begin with. And we've really gotten ourselves the reputation for becoming the world leader in incarceration with, you know, 5% of the world's population, but 25% of its prisoners, are housed in the U.S. And I think that folks are beginning to recognize that because of many things, but also because that, you know, this fiscal climate and the crisis that we see the state suffering and the federal government suffering across the country have made them kind of go back to the table and look at what they're spending money on. And look at the fact that, you know, mass incarceration is a $70 billion, you know, dollar industry annually. And what we've done really hasn't worked. So folks are really beginning to take notice. Folks besides just the traditional, you know, advocates who've been working on these issues, such as the NAACP and our partners. So I think there's a real movement to try and get some, you know, greater national awareness, but also make some real change because folks are really starting to feel it.
I wonder why. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's okay.
I'm curious as to why you think President Obama and the administration are kind of reluctant to do something like a national commission, which would seem to be one way to kind of galvanize American consciousness about this. I mean, the original Kerner Commission, of course, helped lead to the war on poverty, the federal funding of programs that did really put a huge dent in poverty and in installing new young black leadership and Mexican leadership in communities around the country. Mm-hmm. Why do you think there's such a reluctance to tackle this?
So I think we have to look at what the administration has done thus far. And I think we have to start with the understanding there's always room to do more. And I think that this commission is a great idea and it will help bring, you know, further awareness and, you know, additional very important facts to the table about what we've been doing in the criminal justice system, how it hasn't worked, and how really ultimately it has torn apart families and communities. But I think that there are some important steps being taken by this administration that we're very happy about. The Justice Department, you know, I think you may have heard the announcements in terms of their change in stance regarding mandatory minimums and how they want to kind of begin to give judges more discretion so as to not have them automatically hand down these long sentences to minor and nonviolent drug offenders. How last week we had the announcement that they're going to be looking at thousands and thousands of pardon cases or appeals, folks with these long, you know, nonviolent drug offenses who have these long sentences, looking for pardons from the president. So we've seen them make these announcements and these moves that are very good steps and actually go beyond what any other administration, at least in my living memory, has done in terms of criminal justice reform. So I think it's a good step. But I do think that it's up to us as advocacy organizations and leaders and as impacted communities to really hold their feet to the fire and make sure that, some real change comes out of this conversation and these hints that the administration has given, that they're really open to making some change in this area.
I mean, it does seem that we're at a place, and we'll go to the phones here and see what our listeners think at 410-319-8888, because I do want to tackle a little bit of the issues of where prisons are going in this country, and I think they're going in a fairly scary direction with the privatization of prisons. But the issues surrounding this mass incarceration, I mean, we're at a point where many people who are more conservative Americans and Republicans are even talking about it because it's become a fiscal matter. Liberals and lefts and people who are for human rights, the human rights campaign, have always been saying empty the prisons. But this may be a convergence between the reality of the economy meeting the question of human rights.
Yep. No. Absolutely. And I think it's not a bad thing. It's an opportunity, right?
Right.
It's an
exactly. Opportunity exactly.
To
yes.
Make
right.
Change on a very difficult issue. Now, I think we also have to recognize that that has been lacking from the conversations that sort of the fiscal conservatives and the non-traditional allies who are now around the table, you know, the discussion they've been having, what's lacking is looking at how this system really has impacted on communities of color and is biased against people of color and the poor from, you know, point of entry all the way through the different steps of the criminal justice system, all the way to who gets, you know, the death penalty. So I think it's our job to, you know, work with these non-traditional allies and welcome them to the table. I think it's a good change, but it's also an opportunity to begin to create more awareness about other problems associated with the criminal justice system and mass incarceration besides the fiscal impact.
Folks, you can join us here at 410-319-8888. Looking forward to your thoughts and ideas as we talk this first part of our program with Dr. Niaz Kazvari, who is the Criminal Justice Director for the NAACP. 410-319-8888. Bruce, you're on the air.
Yeah. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Bruce.
Yeah, and to your guests, too. So I'm listening to this, and you're probably not going to agree with me, and it might be a little bit provocative and controversial, but I'm not afraid to say what I think. So right away, the criminal justice system is tearing apart black families, tearing and affecting the black community. It could very well be, but you know what it's like? It's not the criminal justice system. I'm going to say this, and you're not going to like this. Maybe the NAACP and the black community should also understand responsibility. And you're always talking about institutional racism. You're not going to like this, but personally, NAACP is a perfect example of institutional racism. Because the bottom line is, fine, maybe there are too many people incarcerated, but they only seem to be interested in how it affects the black community. Now, obviously, I'm a white person. If I only supported legislation or bills, or because I'm somewhat conservative, that only supported the white community and white people, I can imagine what I would be called. Bigot, racist, the whole thing.
No question.
Let's be fair.
So, I don't know if this is your bailiwick, Dr. Khosravi, but you want to grab that a little bit?
You know, I think what I'd like to point out is the NAACP has traditionally worked for the advancement of colored people, as the caller pointed out. But we were founded by a very diverse group of people. And I think that if you improve the system such that it doesn't discriminate against people of color, you're just improving, I forget the term that I was going to use, but I think that it helps uplift the entire community. It helps uplift the poor who are also impacted by this system, who get funneled into it disproportionately. And I think it proves that the system can work for everyone if we're able to change it for the most disadvantaged.
410-319-8888. Mike, Scott, you're on the air.
Hey, Mark and Niaz, we're overdue, both of you. But I just wanted to comment as an opportunity to educate from the last caller, who I often hear calling as well. You know, people of color can be bigoted and prejudiced and ignorant and just downright maddening, but they can never be racist, because racism requires power to be added to race prejudice. And so what the caller does not understand and what many in America do not understand is that once inequities become embedded in systems, people of color can even perpetuate them. And so we see these in the disparities of sentencing and all the many disparities. Every index of life, from health to wealth to incarceration, people of color have embedded inequities. And that's really the difference. And so when you seek to solve for that, you seek to solve, not for color blindness, but to right a wrong. And that means putting your finger on the scales of justice in the other way. And I think we get confused with equality and equity and justice. And so I just wanted to point that out as a point of education for the last caller who gets it confused, as do many in the U.S.
Thank you so much. Always good to hear from you, Mike.
You know, I would like to actually say that that's a great comment. And one of the reasons I went into this field is one of my graduate professors had said the same thing, which I think opened my eyes to the system, is that it really is about power, right? Without power, all you have are discriminatory beliefs and racial bias. But when you have racism, you have people in power who are able to act on their discriminatory beliefs and racial bias, and a lot of times not be held accountable for it, right? And I think that's the problem with our system today, is that there's a lack of accountability for inserting this type of racial bias on an institutional level.
Let's go back to the phone show. I do want to get to our caller in here, a couple others we can get in here, but I want to kind of also focus a bit on what you've been working on around the privatization of our prison system, which is actually working in contradiction to what we're talking about right now. At 410-319-8888, Bob, you're on the air from Washington, D.C.
Hey, how are you today? Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I was a police officer in D.C. back in the 80s, and then I was a federal agent, and then I've worked in many impoverished areas. And I got to tell you, the more that anybody excuses the behavior as opposed to, you know, blaming the justice system for making people be arrested of one race or another, the more the system will perpetuate itself. There's plenty of African Americans that make it out of poor neighborhoods, that make success systems, that don't turn to crime and any other problems, that make themselves arrested by the justice system, as opposed to the claims that for dozens of years that the justice system targets only blacks is ridiculous. And the way that crimes are sentenced are based on people's backgrounds and convictions. And once again, nobody makes certain people do crimes and not crimes. And it's not that simple, because I agree that there is not the availability of programs and of options to get out of bad neighborhoods and to get training and other things. That I agree with. But to continually blame the justice system for arresting disproportionately African Americans is just sickening, as opposed to, let's get better programs to train people. But it's even bigger than that, because you got to have a role model at home that says, hey, stop hanging on the corner. Hey, stop committing crimes.
Well, let's wrestle with what you just said, Bob, and let me ask you to come back and talk about this a bit, Niaz. I think that, there are all kinds of issues here, that one being, I just was thinking about this reports that we've been talking about in this program before from the ACLU on, let's just take marijuana arrests, where the vast majority of people in the United States of America who use marijuana are white. But the vast majority of the arrests for the use of marijuana or selling of marijuana are black. I mean, I think that that's where the imbalance lives. And I think that people can't – personal responsibility is an issue that I think all communities have to wrestle with.
Right.
But that's not the entire story.
No, the story is that the laws are being enforced in an unequal manner, such that certain communities are being punished more for crimes that, not necessarily because they're engaging in those violations more often, as we see with the marijuana arrests, the report that you just cited. So it's not really about personal responsibility. I mean, it's important, but it's really looking at what we're doing for these violations and whether it's really working. Is it appropriate to send somebody with a nonviolent minor drug offense to prison for a very long time and then have them come out and face these collateral consequences where, you know, they can't vote, they can't get a job, they lose a lot of public services and benefits, they can't sit on juries, and a lot of times are funneled back into the system, right? And we're doing that to certain communities more so than we are doing it to others. So it's a question of fairness, right? It's not a question of, just personal responsibility. I think, as you said, that's a separate issue. But it is a question of what this institution has done to specific communities that's going to have lasting impact for generations to come.
Let me ask you to switch gears here for a moment, because I do want to talk a bit about, and we'll go right back to the phones at 410-319-8888. Yemma, you are the next caller up. We're going to get to your call in just a minute. But I wanted to... to talk about the things you've been writing around the privatization of prisons and mm-hmm. the CCA, and it's an amazingly huge industry.
Yes.
In this country, and I think it the power of its profits and its lobbying efforts are something we don't really know, because they fly under the radar.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they are the CCA Corrections Corporations of America is the largest private prison company. In the U.S., they have about 65 facilities in 19 states across the country with about 90,000 beds. And basically what private prison corporations are doing are coming in and offering to states and the federal government, saying that, you know, you guys are going through this fiscal crisis, why don't you enter into a contract with us and we're going to be able to run your prisons more efficiently in terms of financially, and have better results in terms of how prisoners are treated and whatnot. And none of that has panned out, I think, because of many reasons, right? Because this is an industry that profits off of warehousing people, especially people of color, right? And they've taken a stance against many of the criminal justice reform measures that are being proposed, including reforming drug policies that would ultimately reduce the number of people going into prison, right? Because they're solely driven by profits. They have no interest in seeing crime go down and prison populations decrease, right? Because they are driven by that bottom line, which is based on how many people are locked up. So that's just a recipe for failure, I think.
But I think we've had these folks on from CC on the program before. We were talking about immigration. I mean, they run some of the largest facilities holding people who are being deported. Those facilities have been places where hunger strikes have taken place. They've managed facilities that have become, as one was called, kind of a school for gladiators, mm-hmm. in terms of the violence that's allowed to take place inside the prison, with their mm-hmm. own guards betting on fights between inmates. I mean. Mm-hmm. So goes beyond the public purview, because there is no union there. There are no kind of public oversight in many ways.
Exactly.
And this is a pretty frightening scenario. It's almost kind of Kafkaesque in terms of what it's saying about where our prison system could be going. If we do limit the number of people going in, who's now running it?
Right. That's exactly right. And if the people who are running it have an interest in making money based on how many people are inside, then how can things change for the better, right? Private business just can't be responsible for the well-being of the public.
410-319-8888 is the number here. We'll come to these calls coming in. Let us go to Yemma. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
First, the gentleman who said that black people can't be racist because they have no power is repeating the cliche from 30 years ago when we were in college into our revolution. We now have power. Whether we choose to use that power in appropriate ways or not, that is a problem that we have to deal with. Second, we talk about the children going to jail and the police picking them up. If your children were not roaming the streets, instead of doing what they should be doing, they would not be able to be picked up from jail. And as for these prisons, let's go to the root of the problem, and that is our politicians. We have to hold them accountable for the contracts that they sign that deal with our children. To date, we do not hold their feet to the fire to make sure the contracts are more human, are more concerned about the well-being of humans.
Again, thank you so much for your call. We have a lot of callers coming in, but we have only like a couple of minutes left in this segment to move to our next segment. Let's get a quick thought from Elliot, and then we're going to go let Dr. Khosravi have a final thought. Elliot?
Yes, it's a wonderful show. For some of your listeners, I would advise them to purchase the book, The New Jim Crow, Mass Incarceration and the Color of Blindness, or the Age of Color of Blindness, because I am on the prison reform ministry, and just to know that the African-American male only, or people only make up 12% of the U.S. population, but when you look into the institutions, we make up 65% or more of those that are being incarcerated. I strongly advise your listeners, if they ever get the opportunity, just go into a courtroom, any courtroom in the city of Baltimore, in the state of Maryland, or throughout the United States, and just watch those that are of color or African American, and those that are of the Caucasian or European race, or anyone that is not black, and watch how many people, unfortunately, wind up getting sentenced to the harsher crimes and the longer sentence. Thank you,
Elliot. So, as we wrap up this conversation, Dr. Niaz Khosravi, I mean, take us to the place where you think we are going, and where you think the NAACP can play a role.
You know, I think that the second to the last caller, made a very good point about using our power as a community. I think that we saw that be very successful in the campaign to abolish the death penalty in Maryland, in the campaign to get the city council to pass very progressive reform measures in terms of ending racial profiling and stop and frisk abuses in New York. So I think that there is definitely an opportunity, given this fiscal climate and these untraditional allies especially, to all be around the table. But I think it's about demanding from our politicians, who are ultimately responsible for answering to us because we put them in the office, and designing campaigns that really bring the community's voice and demands to the politicians, and making sure that these reforms happen. And I think there's power in that, and I think that we have to really fight back against this wave across the country of rolling back the right to vote and making it more difficult for certain communities to vote. And I think it's really time to organize on a mass level around this issue of mass incarceration, because there's an opportunity to make change, because we have people listening that weren't usually listening. So I think it's we have to take ownership of that power, and we have to use it right and strategically, and work with the NAACP and other advocacy organizations who have led successful campaigns for criminal justice reform across the country.
Dr. Niaz Khosravi, thank you so much for being with us, Criminal Justice Director of the NAACP. Look forward to talking to you a great deal more, have you on our panel discussions, and maybe get you into the studio one day.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Modern Jazz Quartet, Bagg's Groove, playing under us. And why are we playing that? Well, on this day we lost Percy Heath, the man who played the bass, the MJQ. A lot of Percy Heath today on the Mark Steiner Shows. Remember that great jazz musician. Stay with us. We'll be right back as we jump once again into the future of public housing in our community.